Good news, everyone. Several years ago, I tried to log on to AOL, and it just went through. We're online.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 12. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And we've changed your title to guest contributor now.
Yeah. Josh, I'm here.
Yay, Josh is here.
Yeah, you got promoted. Yay, guest contributor.
Yay.
The song makes me feel like I want glow sticks.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. We use this for Game Crazy Radio. I mean, hey, I own both sites, so I'll use the same intro, dang it. And we make jokes about not dropping ecstasy. And I won't say what other things. Yeah. Okay.
Hopefully our listeners aren't inebriated as they're listening to this.
Yeah. Well,
it might give them a little boost to the experience.
There you go. Yeah. Trip a little acid. Do, do, do. Oh, dear God. Okay. What came out this week? That was just weird.
Well, last week's theatrical releases.
Last week, sorry.
James Mangold's remake of 310 of Yuma with Christian Bale. The Brother Solomon with Will Forte and Will Arnett. who nobody will see, and Shoot 'Em Up with Clive Owen, Monica Bellucci, and Paul Giamatti, and in very limited release, although Marty reports that this is indeed playing at the Arclight, Hatchet.
Very cool.
It is playing at the Arclight.
It's at the Arclight, yeah, of all places. Yeah.
Well, I could see them playing just about anything.
Yeah, but Hatchet?
Okay. Well, let's start off with 310 to Yuma.
I think it was a great film.
Yes.
Great, great movie.
I'm thinking I'd probably give it an 8 as opposed to the 7 you gave, but I don't know. I'm teetering more towards a 7.5 because it's still kind of dragged a little bit in a couple spots.
I think it took a little while to get going.
Yeah.
Because, like, and that's one of the best things about it, but it's also a little frustrating because, it doesn't stop moving necessarily, but, like, it doesn't really get its whole concept of a story down until you know, it literally, they take the story on the road. Because like all the opening stuff, it could have been shortened or trimmed. But all the same, I thought it was a terrific film. There's very few things about it I didn't like.
Absolutely.
Is there a lot of action in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, the opening scene is a big action sequence.
Oh, cool. And the last half hour kind of grabs you by the hair and won't let go.
Yeah. It's not quite as good as the final shootout in Open Range, or even Tombstone, but it's close. I mean, there's bullets flying everybody. It's awesome.
And all the performances were great. There wasn't a weak one among them. I was kind of surprised you kind of had a Silverado experience because you had Peter Fonda in kind of a mini role, and then you had Luke Wilson.
Yeah, kind of
in
show
a very
up
he just kind of showed nowhere. Up, beat some people up, and then left the movie.
Yeah,
okay then.
I was going to ask how Peter Fonda was because
he was great.
He wasn't the surfer from Escape from LA at Comic Con.
No,
no, he actually gave a really solid performance.
Yeah, yeah, he was an ornery old bastard like he should have been.
He stole quite a few scenes actually, but I was going to say I think you'll agree with me. The surprise was Russell Crowe.
Yeah, you know I've really been turned off to Russell Crowe for a while now.
Yeah,
and this has made me want to see American Gangster.
Yeah.
And he was really solid in it. He didn't play the good guy. He played the cold, heartless person who might have a heart or might not. You know, they didn't really answer that question. But yeah, I thought it was really well done.
I totally agree with you because we were both saying honestly, yeah, neither of us have liked Russell Crowe in a while. So casting him as a nasty, snake-eyed villain really paid off. But he also made the character charming and really interesting too.
Absolutely. So cool. Yes, it was just good all the way. And Christian Bale was great.
Yes.
He sold that part pretty well. I think.
I thought it was very moving. Not necessarily that his character went through a great deal of change, but just the decisions that he ultimately came to.
I mean, he essentially starts off as a Western version of Job, for crying out loud.
Yes.
Not much else could go wrong in his life. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was really well done. I couldn't recommend it more. It's definitely my pick of the week, that's for sure.
Oh, no question. It could end up being the pick of the month again because we are in September.
This is true.
Well, I was looking at what came out a year ago at this time. It was The Covenant.
Oh, God.
I actually saw that in the theater.
Did you?
Well, because I snuck into it after I paid to see Black Dahlia, which just says a lot about
last. That was a terrible double whammy
there. I know, exactly. See, so hey, at least we're getting a step up. You know, last September of last year, we didn't have anything like 310 and Yuma playing.
Yeah, that's a significant upgrade.
Definitely.
So, cool.
Well, I know I talked about Shoot 'Em Up last week, but I saw it again. I liked it again, so.
Cool.
Still holds up.
My parents liked
it. It's been getting tons of good word.
Yeah, I'm really surprised.
It absolutely has. I'm thinking that might be a DVD year for me, but
you have to see it. It's so much fun.
I will see it in some way.
It's so much fun. I'm so disappointed how terrible it did this weekend, though. I can't.
Wow.
Not a fan. Sorry.
It's all good.
But everyone is asking me, were you in the right frame of mind when you saw it? Yes. I was hanging out at Comic-Con. I saw Superbad the night before. I swear I was in a total juvenile kind of frame of mind. I just didn't like it.
And I finally got around to seeing Superbad yesterday.
And what did you think?
I enjoyed it.
I love how it sounds. I enjoyed it with a question mark.
Well, no, I absolutely did. It's just that it was a very Ben Stiller type of comedy, just because he's the loser who can't get anything right. And Every time any of those kids walked up to someone, I was like, oh no. My buddy I haven't talked to, and you know, we haven't hung out in forever. He's like, dude, I don't know if I can take this for a whole movie. The one gross out gag was absolutely hilarious. And then there's the sub gross out gag. The animated one, we'll just say.
The drawings.
Yes, that was just kind of funny and wrong in its own way, especially when you got to the end credits. I was just like, is that the parting of the Red Sea? Oh, good Lord.
Just when you think they couldn't come up with any more variations on that joke.
Oh, my God, it's so funny.
They came up with so many more.
I like the one riding the missile.
Yeah. Yeah, doing the Doctor Strange logo.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Missile riding a missile. Yes, whoa. But, you know, the characters were great. McLovin is truly the man. Oh. All right. The way he left the movie was freaking beautiful.
Oh, wasn't it?
Yes. So it's worth watching. Yes, absolutely. I probably won't own it or anything. But yeah, it was fun. And I'm not sorry that I saw it. So
good. All right. Josh and I are already going to buy our copies today.
We already pre-ordered it. Yeah.
Over at Suncoast or wherever. Yeah. Cool. Well, let's get to the DVDs, which is kind of an entirely different. Well, no, it's not too bad week.
No, actually, a pretty good week. Well, first, to get through the crap, this week's DVDs include Grey's Anatomy Season 3, more of Charmed, the final season, Bones Season 2, Supernatural Season 2, then you got da-da-da-dun, The Addams Family Volume 3, very nicely done, guys. The Film Crew, Wild Women of Wongo, you know you want that.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. The Graduate, Mrs. Robinson, Dustin Hoffman, and Anne Bancroft, the 40th Anniversary Collector's Edition, gotta get that. The Fly Collection, from the 1958, The Fly, Return of the Fly, and Curse of the Fly, Vincent Price, this is not David Cronenberg. Dead or Alive.
Oh, yes.
I feel like an idiot even saying that out loud. Then, you've got
the only reason I put this in there is because we got it at Hollywood, and I'm like, I didn't even know that was coming out this week, so I had to add it in.
Well, you know, if you got your mind on your money and your money on your mind, you want Snoop Dogg's Hood of Horror like I do. And then, of course, Fraggle Rock Season 3. You find out what's going on with those dozers. Was it Goobers?
No, they were dozers.
Dozers, thank you. It's been a while.
I had to throw in the mention of Fraggle Rock. Are you kidding
Absolutely. I used to love that when I was very – I just don't remember the details. Like, the dozers were the big guys, right?
No, the dozers were the little dudes who were always building stuff.
Okay, well, who
are the guys?
So the dozers had the radishes, or was it the Fraggles? Didn't the Fraggles used to steal the radishes from the dozers?
From the big guys.
Okay.
And the dog, right?
Yeah, I remember there was a dog.
Yeah, there was a dog, too. And yeah, it was a fun show.
That show was cracked out. It was a weird show.
Aren't they going to make it a movie? Now. Wasn't there a rumor like Fraggle Rock being remade into a live-action movie?
Oh,
like,
I hope not.
Oh, cool. A live-action movie?
Yeah.
Please, no.
Yeah, like Jim Carrey dressed up as a Fraggle?
That sounds bizarre. I'd almost want to see it.
If you're in the... Never mind.
If you're still on acid, then exactly.
You know, there's not a whole lot this week, really. I mean, Adam's Family is solid, and it's the Film Crew, so I've got to check it out.
Good stuff.
But, you know, we didn't get Dead or Alive in over at Hollywood. I was kind of bummed, because I really do want to see it.
Oh, I do, man. Too.
I mean, it couldn't be... Come on. It couldn't be worse than freaking... No.
I don't know with that, man.
Worse than an epic movie?
Oh.
Yes.
You think?
I think there's a chance.
No, I don't think it will be, because you're looking forward to seeing it, and you know what it's going...
I know it's going to be crap.
When you go, before you're going, you know, you go into it, so...
She kicks high. Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't think there'd be a worse movie all year than Norbit, then, ooh, what's this Perfect Stranger?
Okay, point taken. Fair enough. All right, well, let's move into some news.
Yes.
If we're talking DVD... I have to talk DVD news. I got two stories, so I'll just crack through them real quick. Apparently, My Name is Bruce is no longer going to be even hitting theaters. It's going straight to DVD.
Oh.
I'll be honest, I haven't been reading good things about it.
Likewise.
But I still really want to see it.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like a great concept.
But unfortunately, it sounds like they didn't really get it right, though.
That's a complete bummer. That sucks.
It's a shame. Do you think that Campbell just needs a truly great director to be able to helm in these high-concept movies that he's trying to do? With him being attached?
Possibly. It could be. I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. So, I mean, once we see it, I'm sure we'll have a lot better idea. Man, the Screaming Brain was just bad all over. So.
Oh, it's so god-awful.
And I guess maybe I should bring up the bummer of no Bubba Hotep 2. Because Bruce Campbell backed out, even though Paul Giamatti was a lock.
So what was the story going to be for the sequel? Was it going to be Nosferatu? Or
Yeah, it was Bubba Nosferatu, and I think Paul Giamatti was playing like Ulysses S. Grant as a zombie.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
It sounded wonderfully sick and weird and wrong. And Don Coscarelli was going to direct it, but Campbell said no.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I don't.
I think he's lost. I think Bruce Campbell's lost, and he just doesn't know what he needs to do.
Do you think he and Lindsay Lohan just need some guidance?
Yeah.
You know, no matter how bad Bruce Campbell's career ever could get. No, okay.
That's true, because Bruce Campbell was not in I Know Who Killed Me. So.
Exactly. You know, and speaking of movies that just came out, well, you know, Halloween, we talked about it last week. Well, like Monday or Tuesday, they released that it's coming out on DVD December 18th. The movie was the number one movie of the week last week. How are you going to...
And it's already... They already got it. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I remember when I was a kid and, like, you know, Batman was in theaters in June, and then, like, the big deal that it was coming out on a video by November. I'm like, wow, we're actually going to get this thing by Christmas.
Yeah.
But now it's like, I mean, and that was mind-blowing then, because that was like 6 months later, but now it's like 4 months, 3 months.
You go see it one weekend in the theaters the next week, and you go to the video store, and you're like, oh, I just saw that in theaters last weekend.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's how it is for Georgia Rule, I swear. Yeah. That thing is like...
Well, and here's the really annoying thing. I mean, I'm looking at Box Office Mojo. We're recording this on Sunday. As of right now, it's already made another $10 million. So, but they're already ready to, you know, close the casket.
And I guess it's, you know, it's strictly for business because, you know, while it's hot right now, supposedly it'll, you know, it'll be a very profitable title when it's out and for, you know, around the Christmas time. But then again, it's like, this is one of the stranger Christmas gifts you could give someone.
Yeah.
Unless you're like Ozzy Osbourne.
Do you know what my grandma got me for Christmas one year?
I want to know.
The Nightmare box set.
Cool.
That's very cool.
Because your grandma is the coolest in the world. We've established this.
Yeah, before. She likes Grindhouse for crying out loud.
She's a wicked cool granny.
Yes.
It's like, thanks.
Yes. All right. I forgot.
I love you, Josh. Here's your nightmare set.
Yay. One last thing. Hey, I got my grandmother giving the final countdown one year. So
cool.
Yes. Good movie. Ocean's 13 is coming on November 13th, and that's all the DVD news I got.
Good high concept there, because it didn't make the 13th in theaters, did it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think it did.
So, but it was a good movie. Well worth checking out. Yeah. We'll be picking it up.
It's one of the better so-called threequels that came out over the summer.
Yeah, because we'll pretend that 12 didn't happen. And
yes. Well, even George Clooney said they should have called it Oceans, the one we should have made first.
Nice. Nice. Cool.
Well, as it turns out, our favorite Seabiscuit lover, Tobey Maguire, decided that after the craptacular Spider-Man, the turd, he wanted to do a take on Robotech, of all things. Why?
What is this? What is Robotech?
Robotech is kind of like a poor man's Voltron.
Okay. Well, not really. Not really. It started off as an anime, and essentially it brought the concept of mechs to most people, which a mech is like a giant freaking robot that you drive around. The cool thing was that, you know, the concept wasn't necessarily new, but the fact that, you know, it opened up with jets and, oh, crap, they're transforming into robots, but it's not Transformers. Holy crap, this is cool. And it was essentially a space soap opera. It really was, with like tech stuff thrown in there for the boys to, you know, be robots. So I don't know. It could be a decent story and all, but I.
Tobey Maguire directing? Isn't he an actor?
Well, he's actually going to star in it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's going to star in it, but
okay.
I don't know.
I mean, I've watched all three generations. I mean, I was a huge Robotech fan as a kid.
Are you okay?
I was.
You're definitely one who should be talking about, because I just never was the biggest Robotech fan.
I'm guessing he'd play the character of Rick, but I don't see it making a good transition to film. I really don't.
It sounds like they're definitely trying to do another Transformers here.
I was just going to say, you know, it's got such a like kind of a light plot. Michael Bay would be perfect for this movie.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. Okay. Anyone else got any news?
Well, it's confirmed, Entertainment Weekly confirmed, that Anton Yelchin is Chekhov in the new Star Trek film. Anton Yelchin was the kid in Hearts in Atlantis. That's probably what he's best known for. And I can't think of what else.
Are they shooting that this Christmas, right? Is when they start shooting?
It comes out next December.
And it comes out next Christmas.
Christmas, January, like all around that time. They should be done by spring.
Okay. So, should be interesting.
We should try to get a set visit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Something, anything. We'll probably get a teaser trailer, I imagine, by like December.
Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we will come right back.
We're here at Geek Label Laboratories to discover if wearing quality Geek Label t-shirts will actually make you smarter. Joining us today is Rodney.
Blinky lights, pretty.
Now we'll outfit Rodney in a sweet as love Geek Label t-shirt. Now we'll introduce Rodney to Schrodinger's cat in the hopes that he will successfully explain the inadequacy of early quantum mechanical theory.
Ooh, tastes like chicken.
Rodney, no.
Snack size, snack size.
Look smart and feel fly in your custom Geek Label t-shirt, ladies tee, or any of the many styles now available, including grilling aprons. You pick the style, you pick the color, we do the rest. Will Geek Label products actually make you smarter?
Geek coherence make Rodney hungry.
No, dumbass, they're custom t-shirts. They're not magic t-shirts. Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
That just sells me on that. Yes, and we'll be hearing from one of the Geek Label crew here in a little bit.
Yay!
And but before we get to our main topic of Westerns, let's go ahead and talk about Chuck Squared. We got a couple things involving Chuck that we need to talk about.
Well, first we'll talk about Chuck, the TV show, the highly hyped, eagerly anticipated, critically acclaimed TV show that's premiering in a few days on NBC.
A week from this past, or this Monday. If this releases on Monday, it's a week from today. If it's on really Tuesday, it's next Monday.
Been getting a lot of good buzz. I haven't
really good buzz. Out of almost all, other than Pushing Daisies, it's one of the most acclaimed new shows that's on.
And we have all seen the pilot, and I'd have to agree, overall. It's a pretty darn fun show.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's, like, on one hand, I don't think it was as, like, fall-on-your-floor funny as, I hoped. But very intriguing, and definitely, you know, an original fusion of, like, the whole Alias Employee of the Month idea.
Yeah. The Office meets Alias meets Heroes.
Sven Nikita, yeah.
Meets Best Buy.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, Buy More. That's what he works
on. Buy More, that's right, yeah.
Well, here's a really interesting thing to me. I can't stand McGee for the most part, but he directed this.
Mm. That is a shocker.
There's actual development. There's actual character. It's not all just stuff blowing up, and I really enjoyed that overall. I mean, the kid who plays Chuck, Zachary Levi, he was pretty darn funny, I gotta
say. What's the girl's name? Because we asked.
She's got some impronounceable name. It's like
Yvonne Strasowski?
Yeah.
Ooh. Hot Polish chick.
She is very attractive.
Yes. And it has Adam Baldwin.
Yes.
Firefly.
It's a Firefly. That's right.
Yes. It's a really ludicrous idea from the beginning. But yeah. they what I liked about it is that they actually do have a good time with the convention is of a super spy and a guy who has no clue what he's doing.
Yeah, the action is done with style. The comedy is done in a really nice, wry way. Chuck is a really likable, recognizable character.
Yeah, and, you know, Adam Baldwin's character could have been the complete hard-ass all the way through to the core like it usually would have been in most TV shows, but he relented a little bit. He actually showed that he had a brain,
yeah,
which I really did appreciate in a character in a TV show. So, yeah. I mean, you can tell he's going to be like the difficult one to get along with or whatever, but still, it's not insulting to your intelligence.
But like you, I wonder how far can they carry out this concept? I mean, do you think it'll last a whole season, let alone?
I think it could. We'll get to this in a couple of weeks. I wanted to talk about Chuck today because it comes out so soon. But, I mean, we've seen Bionic Woman, Sarah Connor Chronicles, and Reaper as well. And I think so far, Chuck has the best shot probably thus far.
Oh, no question.
Reaper looks like it could actually do really well as well, especially if they take the concept where I think they're taking it. Sarah Connor, I don't see. Well, we'll get to that stuff later. Never mind. I'm sorry. We're talking about it all
but
right
it's,
now.
It is going to be interesting to see where they go with
it. I think it's going to build a lot of momentum really quick. It's going to be a matter of if they can keep it up.
And right. The good thing is they don't know. I mean, we don't know exactly, and they don't know either, I bet, what he had seen. So it's like they can throw in a bunch of like, oh, wait, you know, just try to.
Well, yeah, it's a giant database. And he sees all these images that are actually encoded as secret, you know, top secret information and between all the secret service agencies. And they can take that particular gag and run it forever.
Right. But I wonder if it's going to be like that Fox show John Doe where they didn't even get to fully explain who the heck John Doe was.
Exactly. Well, in this case, there's really nothing to explain in that case, in that regard. So that's kind of one big caveat that you're out of right off the bat. So
I'll say this really quick. The one thing I'll mention about Bionic Woman is that pilot has so many characters that they introduce. None of them I found appealing or engaging at all, but they introduced like at least a dozen characters. Yeah. And with Chuck, there's only a handful of characters. They're all interesting. They're all different. And I can see like a series, you know, unfolding out of each of them, every one of them.
Yeah, it could turn into a show that's more like Veronica Mars, where you aren't, you know, completely dependent on Chuck.
Right.
Which could be very helpful.
Because even like the side character, like Sarah Lancaster as his sister and her boyfriend, who always says awesome.
Captain Awesome.
Yes. Yeah, like, yeah, there's some good stuff there that I could see. Like, that's appealing.
I could see someone seeing, oh, there's a secret agent living here. Oh, it can't be this loser guy. It's got to be this Captain Awesome dude. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. So, I think it'll be fun. Who knows how long it'll go? That's always the challenge in writing a TV show, though. So, yeah, we'll just see. All right, we've got another Chuck to talk about. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Because Josh got to see something up at Boulder.
Yeah, good luck, Chuck.
Sounds like you were saying good luck at success, too.
Yeah. No, it wasn't terrible. I told you guys before, I think we've been so spoiled this summer with Knocked Up and Superbad that this was not as good. But not to say it was terrible. The good stuff is I think the people that really like Dane Cook, this is the movie that they've been waiting for. I think it's his raunchy, movie that everyone's been it's not Employee of the Month or anything. It's a lot of slapstick humor and stuff, but the bad part, Dan Fogler, is that his name?
Sure.
Do you know who? the guy that was in Balls of Fury.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
I hated his character in the movie. He was so over the top, disgusting. And I don't know what it was about that bothered me so much, because Superbad was, way more disgusting, I think. But this was just didn't have any heart to it. Does that make any sense?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. And there's more nudity than Shoot 'Em Up as body counts. I've never seen as much nudity before in any movie. Yeah.
Wow. So wait, nudity and Jessica Alba's in the film. Any correlation there?
No.
Aw, man.
Yeah.
I mean, oh.
There's a montage of Dane having sex with all these different girls, and it's probably about 4 minutes long, and it's probably about 300 different girls. No joke.
Okay, then.
Wow. It's oh my God.
Is it funny, or it just goes on?
It just keeps going on and on and on, and you're it was funny for the first, because they're doing all these crazy stuff, and then it's just okay, do they have any more jokes to get to? I mean, I don't know. It wasn't terrible, but...
So you thought Dane Cook was well used in this?
Yeah, and it looked like he did a little bit of improv, too, and I think Jessica Alba had fun with it, and she was probably the best performance in the movie. Wow. I'd say, yeah.
Interesting.
Wow. Jessica Alba's the best performance in the movie. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I don't know. It was okay. It was okay. I'd probably give it a 6.
Okay.
Okay.
So. Cool.
All right, then. Well, you heard it here first. And before we get to too much else, I wanted to give a quick shout out also to our good friend Ethan.
Yes.
Wrote us a great review of Michael Clayton playing up at the Toronto Film Festival, and he's
said Scoop.
He might get us one for No Country for Old Men as well. But he said initially it's awesome. So
awesome.
Can't wait to hear more from that.
Thank you, Ethan. Appreciate it.
Yep. Let's move on to our topic, sir.
Yes. Well, went from Good Luck Chuck and Chuck to Ground Chuck. We're going to do the Westerns now. I guess you can't start with Westerns without mentioning The Great Train Robbery. I got to mention this movie. Sorry, I was on my syllabus.
No, absolutely.
I freaking love this movie, and I'll tell you why. This is one of the only Westerns ever shot in New Jersey, for Pete's sake. So, New Jersey, the location of, Clerks 2 and The Great Train Robbery.
I was going to say, because when you think New Jersey,
you automatically think of the Western. That's right.
Absolutely.
The Great Train Robbery is, it was made in 1917. It's one of the famous old Westerns by Edwin Porter. It's famous for its final scene. The whole movie is, pretty old, ancient, creaky Western. It's one of the first movies ever with a narrative. It has a scene at it's the final shot of the movie, very famous, where a cowboy points his gun at the camera, fires a couple of times. You have to understand, movies were brand new. Audiences didn't know how movies worked. People saw this and they freaking flipped out. People died of shock. People passed out. People fled. People ducked. People thought they were being shot at. They didn't know how movies worked. They just thought it was just these moving pictures on a screen. They didn't realize the power that movies had, and certainly the filmmakers didn't. It was this shot, this amazing shot of this cowboy firing at the screen that really, really kind of pushed forward just the potential that movies had, the excitement that they had, and the way that audiences could get so caught up in it emotionally and personally. And it's really one of the groundbreaking, iconic moments in all of cinema. And that's one of the reasons why Westerns, along with musicals, are the two... When film initially started back in the 20s and 30s, when it really started to gain momentum and popularity, they were the two most popular of genres. More so, I always say the most popular genre now are, sequels and remakes. But back in the 20s and 30s, the most popular genres by far were musicals and Westerns. Most Westerns are, they tend to romanticize the era a great deal. They tend to make, the cowboys always, wrangle up the evil Indians. Ha ha ha. Not quite the way it happened. And the cowboys always, you know, saunter off into the sunset. It's always very romantic, romanticized. The best westerns have a real sense of grittiness to them. I got to mention High Noon, films like Shane, the John Wayne movie, The Searchers. And I guess I should ask you guys real quick, have you guys seen a lot of John Wayne movies? Or
Mm-mm. Not a whole lot of the westerns. My favorite is absolutely McClintock. I know it's a comedy, but it's so much fun.
It's good stuff, and he was good at comedy. He really was. Because John Wayne is one of these guys, like, I would never consider him much of an actor, but as far as being a movie star, he's one of the great ones, no question. It's ironic that he won an Oscar for playing Rooster Cogburn in True Grit. And most people say he probably won the Oscar because he actually did his actual stunt in the scene, which is a scene where he puts the reins of the horse in his mouth and, you know, kicks the horse. The horse is galloping at full gallop. He's got the reins in his mouth, and he's firing guns. I mean, he could have lost his teeth in that scene, you know, let alone died. But he actually did this stunt, and he won the Academy Award for it. But his best performance is easily his last film, The Shootist, where he plays a gunslinger who's an ailing, dying of cancer gunslinger, which is exactly what John Wayne was when he shot the film. The Shootist also has Lorne Bacall and Ron Howard in it. It's a fantastic movie. Really, really good Western. But all right, well, you can't talk about Westerns without talking about Sam Peckinpah's The Wild Bunch, the movie that really, really pushed ultra-violence in movies. It's rumored that Peckinpah had the actors have exploding watermelons beneath their satchels to give it the whole gory effect, and boy, does it work. That movie is, it's dated now, but for its time, you know, the whole gunshot entry wound, I mean, we owe a lot to Sam Peckinpah and your ultra-violent sensibilities. Absolutely. Thank you, Sam. So I guess we should just jump into, like, all the modern stuff. I mean, you mentioned Silverado, really the movie that brought back Westerns in 85.
Well, let's go back a little ways, just because we also have to talk about the serials.
Absolutely.
And you have to Sergio Leone and stuff, too.
Ooh, we have not talked about Leone. You're
yes,
right.
Yes,
you're
there's
right.
A few.
Right,
right.
We're slow down, Barry.
Sorry, screw the 80s. Let's rewind. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you talk about the evil Indians and stuff. Lone Ranger was really, you know, it was very revolutionary in that fact that he had an Indian as his sidekick. And, you know, I mean, you talk about things that take little steps that actually have great repercussions. I think that helped a lot as far as, I mean, you know, Indian race relations, I guess you could say.
Yes.
In that, you know, he wasn't just, you know, an idiot. He knew a heck of a lot of
Tonto
stuff.
Tonto is much smarter than the Lone Ranger was.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I thought that was a big thing. I mean, I guess we should mention the Roy Rogers, Dale Evans type stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Tom Mix. Absolutely. Got to mention, because the cool thing about a lot of that stuff is that they were actually doing all their own stunts. I'm a big Tom Mix guy because he actually, you know, there's a famous shot of him, like, at full gallop on a horse, and he jumps from one cliffside to another, and that's really him. Like, these guys, they were real cowboys.
Absolutely.
You know, I wouldn't say Roy Rogers was a magnificent actor, but as far as being a cowboy movie star, he was one of the best.
Absolutely. So I'll let you mention some Leone if you'd like to, sir.
Well, I was just Once Upon a Time in Mexico. I mean, that's what it's called, right?
Once Upon a Time in the West.
In the West, I'm sorry. Yeah, now Mexico would be a different movie.
Would be like,
sorry.
You know, I just picked that up, and I still haven't had a chance to watch it. I didn't get to it this week. I'm really bummed.
Oh, it's good.
I've heard it's amazing.
It's really, really good. And you got, it's Henry Fonda, right? Who plays the bad guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
And the actress in it, once again, name escapes me. She's gorgeous.
You mean Claudia Cardinale?
Yeah. How do you know their names? I always forget their names.
I am not the human IMDb. I've got this great little thing called IMDb sitting on my laptop right next to me. So
okay.
It always helps
cute,
to cheat.
Very cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, looking at this, since we can cheat, Dario Argento and Bernardo Bertolucci wrote this? What?
It's got to be the coolest, like, writer team up ever.
It's really long, but you don't feel it. Because it's so awesome.
Okay, those two, along with Leone, came up with the story, and then Leone and Sergio Donati wrote it. Okay,
Leone hung out with, like, the coolest people.
I know.
Absolutely. Well, you know, those Italians.
Yeah, absolutely. Freaking literally. Did you like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Have not seen it.
It's great. Lee Van Cleef, who's also in Escape from New York, he plays the bad guy, and he's fantastic in it. He's the ugly. And, of course, Clint Eastwood's the good.
Yeah, that's a good segue into the Clint Eastwood era that really brought Westerns. I mean, I know you say Silverado did a lot, and I think it did.
Well, I mean, certainly for, like, the 60s and the 70s, absolutely. I mean, Leone really, he brought a real mythological quality. Because, like, the Westerns were always good guys, bad guys, cowboys, Indians, you know, very black and white. But, like Clint Eastwood's The Man with No Name, I mean, you never knew which side he was on. He was always this anti-hero. Very much, you know, a figure for an inspiration, I should say, for Stephen King's gunslinger character, very much like Roland. And certainly, you know, Leone just made the Western movie so mythological. There's something so large in life about him, so epic, and it was always like this ultimate, you know, battle between good and evil, except you never quite knew who truly was good and who truly was evil.
Absolutely.
It's good stuff. And of course, you can't, you know, you can't not mention Ennio Morricone's classic music.
Yes, very true. Very true. I think Eastwood just kind of single-handedly brought back the Western.
Oh, yeah. Well, he obviously has such a love and understanding of that genre.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, here's the joy of Screen Geeks. We can talk about TV, too. This is the time when you also had The Gambler. You had Maverick. You know, I mean, anything James Gardner did during that time period, too. I mean, oh, yeah. Support Your Local Sheriff is my favorite Western comedy just about of all time.
It's a great show. Yeah.
So, I mean, oh, yeah. Great movie. So, I think, I don't know.
Oh, I got to mention My Darling Clementine. I was watching my film class last year.
Oh, yeah.
You ever seen that?
Isn't that with W.C. Fields?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's good. It's black and white.
Wow, W.C. Fields.
Old Western. Old.
Yeah, it's
Western,
good stuff.
But it's awesome.
Very interesting. Huh. Okay, well, let's keep going with the discussion, because there's some points I want to go after we get to the current day. So.
Okay, well, let's talk about Eastwood's contribution.
Yeah.
Because, I guess we just jump to Unforgiven. I mean, here's a movie that really kind of sums up kind of what Leone did with these Westerns, because Clint Eastwood's character, Bill Mumy, in Unforgiven, on one hand, he is a bit of a scoundrel, and he is a bit of a, you know, an old gunslinger, killer for hire. But it's interesting, because on one hand, he is kind of a guy who would do anything for money, but he has these really impassioned monologues where he basically talks about basically the implications of murder, the morality of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. The scenes, like, I mean, the character sequence was really good in it. I mean, I know I've come out as not a fan of the film overall, but the characters were absolutely fascinating. Morgan Freeman,
not a fan?
It was the length. I thought it dragged on way the heck too long.
Okay.
By the time you got to the end, I'm like, I'm ready for this to be over. I'm ready for it to be over. So that was why, mostly.
Okay.
Like, all the characters were great. Gene Hackman was in it, right?
Yeah.
He was great.
He won the Oscar for that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've only seen it once, so forgive me if I'm not too up on it. But Morgan Freeman was a really interesting character, I thought.
Yeah.
He was kind of like the most moral of all of them.
Oh, definitely. No question, yeah.
And even then, still kind of flawed.
Right.
So that I think that's one of the interesting things about Westerns, is that they really never bring in characters, especially like from the 80s on. The Western really never has a 100% pure of heart good guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, even like the bubblegum crap. I mean, we've got to talk about the Young Guns movies. I mean, you got Billy the Kid, you know. You've got all these.
It's a fun movie.
They're fun, you know, and you've got all these, you know, these teen beat actors of their day, you know, Estevez, Charlie Sheen, and Dermot Mulroney, and all these guys, you know, playing these pretty boy cowboys. But at the same time, there was a sense of grittiness in there, in that Estevez really played Billy the Kid like he was this sociopath, like this crazed, giggling, manic killer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so he was probably one of the few really true high points, like from a film perspective.
Oh, yeah.
He was really good in it.
He was good in both of those movies. And Young Guns 2 is actually a really good movie. The first one, you know, kind of bubblegum crap. But the second one actually has real sweep and ambition to it, I thought.
Cool.
And it's got done John Bon Jovi song, so.
There you go.
What John Bon Jovi song?
Blaze of Glory.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, just don't sing it. Please, please.
Yeah, I will. What was that movie with Colin Farrell where he played Billy the Kid?
American Outlaws.
And, yeah.
And Ali Larder was in that one,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
there you go.
And Scott Gunn. I've never seen it. I just know who's in it.
And we just talked about Tombstone.
Tombstone, yes.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to the important ones. In fact, do we want to talk about the one that James Vanderbeek was in? What was it?
I don't even know he was in one.
Oh, yeah, me either.
It's James Vanderbeek, Ashton Kutcher.
What?
Yeah, I kid you not. It's a Western they were all in. It was, what is it, American Raiders? What is it called?
You're making this up.
No. I swear. It's a real movie.
Ashton Kutcher in a cowboy movie?
Yeah. I swear. It was Ashton Kutcher and James Vanderbeek. It was Steve Miner, I think, directed it. It was a piece of crap. Barely got released.
Texas Rangers.
That would be it. Texas Rangers.
Oh, good Lord. Let's look at this and see who's in this pile.
You're not going to believe the cast list on this. This is astonishing.
James Vanderbeek, Rachel Lee Cook, Ashton Kutcher, Dylan McDermott, Usher.
Oh my God.
Like,
I have to. When did this come out?
It's like everybody in Dimension
Films. I'm not done. Tom Skerritt and Randy Travis and Robert Patrick.
Yep.
Wow.
When did this?
2001.
Yeah. Oh. But it was like made in 99. Like, I know they were.
Yeah, when.
They hold on. Yeah, it was like when Dawson's Creek was popular. Yeah.
It's like nobody knows who James Vanderbeek is now.
Yeah.
No. Oh,
besides,
wow.
Besides Scary Movie. What was Scary Movie 1 where he walked in the window and was like, wrong house? Or when he's,
yeah.
Like, the last thing he's done.
Right.
There you go.
All right, let's get this back on track. What do you guys think of Dances with Wolves?
I have a very unique perspective of this film.
Okay, let's hear it.
I loved it the first time I saw it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I was dragged to see it 4 times by various family members in the theater. So I now have a special hatred for this
film in my
heart.
That's 12 hours of Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
12 hours, man. That's half a day.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting. Of course, at that point, I got sick of everything in that movie. So I'm really not the person to say much more about it.
Okay.
I thought Costner was really really good in it, though.
You know, I saw it when it was in theaters. I'll say this real quick. I saw it in theaters, and I absolutely loved it. Loved it. It was an excellent 4-star movie. Terrific. On TV, no, I can't do it. It's just such a – it's a movie you have to see on the big screen. To me, on TV, it is dull.
See, I walked in on my friend watching it, and I walk in, and I just hear, and then I put the – grass in a pot and cooked it to. Is it just Kevin Costner narrating the whole movie?
It's kind of like Never Cry Wolf meets a Western.
yeah, sure.
It looked so boring to me. I was just like, oh.
And by the time I hit the third and fourth time, yes, those scenes dragged forever. Yes.
But it's a gorgeous absolutely movie. And like the buffalo hunting scene is fantastic. There's so many great scenes in it, but I swear, like, unless you see it on the big screen where it needs to be seen, it's just not the same thing.
It really isn't. No. Oh, yeah. Thanks for that.
Oh. All right, let's bring this yes, up. Let's please. Talk about Tombstone. Let's talk about Tombstone. Because this thing, I remember when Tombstone came out, they released it on Christmas Day. The reviews were bad. You know, Kurt Russell at the time could not open a movie. You know, it really looked like they were just dumping this thing out there. And it ended up being not only a big hit, but I swear, the enthusiasm for Westerns, the enthusiasm for Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer just really took off.
I was going to say, the man said, I'll be your Huckleberry. That's the dumbest line on the face of the earth, but he made it so freaking cool.
Yeah, everybody loves that line. Yeah, yeah.
So, yes. Well,
and anything, crazy cast, too. Yeah. You know, James Priestley, Jason Priestley's in it, and Charlton Heston. I mean, amazing cast.
Oh, yeah, Sam Elliott's great in it. And yeah. Bill Paxton even does good in a Western. Come on. Like, huh?
Yeah, everybody. It's,
we got to get out of here.
Yeah, exactly. So, for game over, man. Yeah. I got a tiny. Never mind. so I had to go two lies.
It's a good movie. It really is.
I really think it's a good Western. At the end, it kind of turns into a snuff film in a way. Kind of after he starts going after everybody, it's just like,
oh yeah,
I'm gonna just start raging. At that point, I think it does lose some steam.
But I guess the Gunfight OK Corral is very well done, because there was absolutely a movie called The Gunfight OK Corral with Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas, and like the whole movie was the gunfight, which is a load of crap. The Gunfight OK Corral only lasted a few minutes, and Tombstone was honest about that. It's a thrilling sequence, but it goes by really fast, because really it was a slaughter. It wasn't a gunfight.
Well, I think who directed that again? I forget.
Tombstone. George P. Cosmatos. He did Rambo, First Blood Part 2.
Interesting. Okay. Either he was a really good director for that movie, or just, I mean, you really cared about those characters. There was actual character development in there, and the characters were played in a way where, I mean, they were played how they actually were, which actually added a lot of depth to them. Definitely. I think there's a lot of care behind that to ensure that as much as was historically accurate as possible.
Absolutely. Like, the movie that was supposed to absolutely crush it was the movie that came out the following summer, Wyatt Earp, which, you know, was directed by Lawrence Kasdan, who did Silverado.
Which,
you know,
everyone laughed at.
Wyatt Earp was just a drag. It was a drag. There's like an hour of greatness in that movie. It really is. And Dennis Quaid is an excellent Doc Holliday. And, you know, Costner is pretty good as Wyatt Earp. But, yeah, the movie just...
But Kurt Russell just kind of owned that character.
Everything in Tombstone just completely dwarfs Wyatt Earp. And Wyatt Earp does not know when to quit, too. It just keeps going on and on and on.
I got
to
ask, why do you think it is that every decade we get, like, two really good Westerns and then, like, nothing?
That's how it's turned into.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
Because everyone's like, oh, 3:10 to Yuma is going to bring back all these Westerns. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not going. Jesse James is going to come out, and that's going to be terrible. And then it's going to go quiet. Honestly, I think that's what's going
on. It's happen. Very I mean, I think a lot of people, I don't know. I think it's because Hollywood is so set on always being in the future and looking ahead, and Westerns are the past.
Westerns couldn't be more. Yeah, they're ancient. And, you know, it's one thing with musicals. Like, musicals on a roll, even if Sweeney Todd flops, and I don't think it will. I think Sweeney Todd is going to be big. But even if it flops, we've still had the momentum of Chicago, Dreamgirls, and Hairspray. And Hairspray just outgrows and
even,
Chicago.
And even Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, Moulin Rouge, which, you know, but... But, like, excuse me, Hairspray just outgrossed Dreamgirls.
Oh, did?
Yeah, so wow. Now, like, you've got this momentum going. You know there's going to be at least three or four more musicals until the genre can potentially die, you know, if those next four musicals are stinkers. The thing about Westerns, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, you know, Open Range, which I thought was an excellent movie and a great Western that Kevin Costner directed as well as starred in, Open Range was a hit. But then, you know, The Alamo was one of the biggest bombs of 2004, you know, which absolutely just killed the genre. You know, and then last year you had this Jesse James movie, which was supposed to open up and was supposed to be like, you know, Brad Pitt's Oscar movie. And it got, you know, held back a whole year.
Well, wasn't Cold Mountain technically?
Cold Mountain?
Or is it more of like a Civil War?
That's, yeah, it's more Civil War epic. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Brokeback Mountain wasn't really a cowboy.
No, no. Everybody says it's a Western. Like, it's not a Western.
It's a drama.
It's a melodrama. Yeah, no. That is not. That you could call it a gay romance. You could call it a melodrama or like a romantic drama, but it's
could
not
a Could you
call
it a gay cowboy movie? Even that?
Maybe.
That's getting a little bit, you know, snarky, though.
Yeah, I know. I'm not trying
to. I don't know. Yeah, to me, that calling a movie as a Western was a total load of crap, because Ang Lee did a Western called Ride with the Devil with Tobe Maguire and Jeffrey Wright and Jewel, of all people, and it was really good.
I remember hearing about it.
Yeah. It was really good, yeah. I mean, everybody talked about it because Jewel had her, you know, topless scene, but no, really, it was better. Right. It wasn't just that. It was actually a really solid movie.
But what about Posse?
What about Posse, the all-black Western? Yeah, from Mario Van Peebles, the director of New Jack City, he did this.
And Solo.
Well, I don't want to talk about Solo.
I'm sorry, yeah.
Because that just drives Van Peebles' like reputation into the ground. But Posse actually had some ambition, you know.
It absolutely did.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it, you know, it's memorable as being like the only all black Western out there.
Yeah, it was interesting. I thought. Yeah.
Yeah, Tone Loc is one of the cowboys.
Yes.
And, you know,
yes.
Where
you
else
did.
Can you see Tone Loc as a cowboy?
So. Yeah, it's kind of like Leprechaun in the Hood. Where else are you going to see Ice-T in a wide collar shirt and bell bottoms, in a fro?
This is true.
Yes. All right, well, there's. Do we want to talk about any other more current ones? Or,
well, did you guys see Geronimo?
No.
Geronimo was good. It's Gene Hackman, Jason Patrick, and, you know, in a very early role, Matt Damon. And Wes Studi plays Geronimo. It was actually a really good movie.
Okay, cool.
Matt Damon. Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, every time we bring up anything within him in it, it always has to come back to
Matt Damon.
There you go.
It's just so funny.
It is. I want to bring up some of the remakes.
Please.
Or I should say where the Westerns have come from.
Okay.
In a way, you can't mention Westerns without mentioning films like The Magnificent Seven,
yes,
Fistful of Dollars, that were remade from Kurosawa films.
Right.
And, you know, I just kind of wanted to, you know, do you think that it's really an appropriate correlation between cowboys and samurai?
Yes, because the samurais had this outlaw code. I mean, it's no mistake, it's no accident, rather, that, you know, people talk about The Last Samurais like Dances with Ninjas.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've got these outlaws who are above the law, and yet they're more just and righteous and more honorable than a lot of these so-called guys with badges on, in these movies anyway.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I would say so. Just like, you know, Yojimbo, you know, you got The Last, yes, Man Standing with Bruce Willis. Not exactly a Western, but definitely has that whole Western mentality.
Well, and that's in the Fistful of Dollars family.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, we have to bring that up because, you know, doing the film snob, we're probably never going to cover those two because they're pretty well-known films, but they need, right, to be mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Because The Magnificent Seven is an amazing film.
Yes.
And to realize, this is one of those times when the remake is just as good because it's a little bit different as the original.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you could make the same case with Yojimbo as well.
It's rare that you can capture, like, the very essence of these movies, what made it good in the first place, you know, in another incarnation rather than completely screwing it up and losing what was good about it.
Absolutely.
The second time around.
Yeah, I get it. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I got to ask, would you guys consider, this is a dumb question, Kill Bill 2 to be kind of a Western?
Kill Bill?
2, the second one?
The second one, yes.
Yeah.
So, especially the way it opens up with David Carradine, like, on the porch and the whole, yeah, it's that feels like a Western in a sense. I mean,
it kind of screams Leone in many ways.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, her being buried alive and that whole, you know, out in the desert. Yeah, it definitely has that Leone feel, definitely.
Yes.
And all the music, too, and it's just, like,
absolutely.
It's very Western-y, yes.
No, you're very right. No, I would definitely, you know, classify it like a neo-Western. Like, I know Mangold's third movie, one of my favorite movies, Copland, has been called a neo-Western because of the whole mentality of the good sheriff going up against the bad guys. Yeah.
Well, and you find other cultures kind of borrowing back. Like Cowboy Bebop, you could make a very, I know it's an anime, but dang it, we can talk about whatever we want.
That's right, man.
It definitely has a Western feel to it.
Yeah.
Granted, it had the score was written as blues, but still there's a lot of Western themes in it. And Firefly. We'll get to that doing this in an entire show at some point, but I mean, there's no denying the Western themes. And in a way, I think that's part of why a lot of people don't like Serenity as much as the show Firefly, because it pretty much ditches all the Western conventions just about altogether.
And it loses that song.
Well, that's true, too. Yes.
Which I want to start singing, but I won't. Should we talk about Shanghai Noon?
I don't know.
Is that a joke?
I really don't. I honestly don't consider it a Western. It's an action comedy. I mean, you know, there's...
Well, you want to talk about Wild Wild West?
No, but I do want to talk about Back to the Future Part 3, which I would consider
absolutely.
That a Western. Yes.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. But it maintained a lot of the conventions of
Wild,
a Western.
Not Wild Wild West.
No, that would go under the subgenre of crappy Will Smith movies.
Yeah. A bad TV adaptation to movies.
Yeah, which is an entirely new.
That's another show coming soon.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about Back to the Future 3.
Back to the Future 3, you've got like the scene where he goes and where Marty McFly goes in the bar, and you've got like four guys sitting at the table, and those four guys are all like notable, legendary Western cowboy actors, and some of the biggest stuntmen of the day who would always want to be in a Western, like, came out of the hills to be in this movie. They couldn't wait to, like, you know, get on the horses again, and, you know, and be the guy to be dragged through the square, you know, and standing in for Michael J. Fox. I mean, this movie, like cowboy enthusiasts, cowboy movie makers, and stuntmen, they all want to be a part of this movie. And it's strange because, like, it really is a Western. It's an old fashioned Western. Yeah.
It takes the whole idea of a guy going back in time, you know, like, you know, the King Arthur's court type things, you know, but actually stays true to the formula.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, he's talking about going running for fun. Why in the hell would you want to do that? Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful the way that they played it straight laced. It was still a comedy, it was still fun, but they stayed very true to the spirit of the Western, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I would go with the whole thing, and people say, like, you know, Back to the Future 3 was kind of a letdown, especially after number 2, where you jumped all over the place.
What?
I can almost agree with that, because I thought, yeah, you know, Back to the Future 3, why didn't they go to, like, King Arthur's Court or, like, dinosaurs? I mean, why didn't they do all that cool Back to the Future the ride stuff, you know?
I'm totally with you. I thought 3 was a disappointment.
But I still like 3.
I did. I liked 3 better than 2.
Did you really?
Absolutely. Okay. 2 was a gimmick.
3 has a lot of heart. I'll say that, because 2 doesn't. I love 2, but it's kind of a dark, mean-spirited little movie.
But it's so much fun.
And it's a giant... Well, the movie is Back to the Future 2 is a giant gimmick. That's all. This is saying that something is a gimmick when the entire premise of the entire trilogy is a gimmick.
I would agree with you. It is special effects driven. Yes. It really is. Whereas the third one is strictly character.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is where I thought it shined. Cool. Absolutely. All right. Well, I think we've covered this bad boy pretty well.
Westerns. We're talking about Back to the Future
3.
Nice.
Hey, you know, this is something, you know, if Westerns only come out every year or two and we get something of the quality of a 310 to Yuma, you know, I'm okay with that.
Absolutely.
I'd rather see a couple, you know, a couple really good movies come out every couple of years as opposed to a whole slew of crap, you know, like horror movies these days, right, for the most part. I'm not taking anything out for the most part, it's steaming piles all over the place. So
there's a bunch.
Yes. All right. Let's go ahead and talk about what's coming out next week then.
In theaters, you have Jodie Foster and Neil Jordan's film, The Brave One.
The sequel to Death Sentence.
Jodie Foster is the sequel. Charles Bronson.
Yeah, it was the sequel to Death Wish. Yeah.
That's right. And then you got Robert Forster and a crapload of CGI lizards in the eagerly awaited Dragon Wars.
Yes.
A movie that we were excited about a year ago is finally getting into theaters. Billy Bob Thornton, Sean William Scott, and why Susan Sarandon in Mr. Woodcock. Mr. Woodcock. And then in limited release, also pushed back a great deal, and we know heavily retooled. Good luck, Julie Taymor. I hope your movie's as good as you intended. Evan Rachel Wood stars in Julie Taymor's Across the Universe. And then In the Valley of Elah, in limited release, with Tommy Lee Jones and Charlize Theron, directed by Paul Haggis, the guy who gave us Crash.
Okay, then. Wow. I can't wait for D-War. Dragon Wars.
It looks pretty
I honestly
sweet.
Haven't seen the trailer for it.
Oh, you'd love it, man.
It's going to be
fun. It looks
fun.
So cool.
It's going to be fun. It's not like Renaissance dragons. It's more like it's Asian dragons, so they look more like snakes. Just so in case, why you look like a damn snake?
Yeah.
Now you know. And it's Korean. It's from the people who brought you The Host.
And it's $70 million. It's the most expensive movie ever done overseas, and it's by the same production company, special effects-wise, that did all the Lord of the Rings movies. The special effects.
Yeah, Weta worked on it, didn't
they? Yeah, it looks fantastic.
Yeah.
In terms of plot and dialogue, I'm sure it's going to be...
It's a monster movie.
But yeah, as far as monster movies go, I mean, this looks better than so much better than Rain Over Me. Rain Over Me, I'm sorry.
I'm like, what?
Rain of Fire.
Oh, yeah, I was like, Rain of... Well, this probably will be a good boost for Slusho or whatever the hell that film is going to be called.
Cloverfield, it's called.
I really hope that it leads to bringing more Asian films to the cinemas here. Like, Old Boy never saw a theatrical release. None of the Vengeance, you know, Sympathy for Mr. or Lady Vengeance got releases.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to go out and say Mia K should have a release because...
Well, Audition had a very limited release in the U.S. It played in Denver like 2 weeks and that's it.
Yeah. So I'm hoping it does that for it. I still want to see Across the Universe.
Oh, me too.
Me too. Me too. That trailer's arresting. I'll see anything Julie Taymor does. You know, the reports have been bad. And it's not her fault. Apparently, they've recut, re-edited her movie. They had no faith in it in the first place. They didn't get it the second time. Like, this thing is... It's just...
And here's the catch 22. If it's not her vision, I don't want to see it. But if I don't see it, there might not even bother with the DVD release of the unedited version.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll see it.
Yeah, and you know, all the stuff that I know Josh has mentioned, like apparently Bono has a cameo.
And he's producing it, too.
And he produced it, and the visual effects sequences look phenomenal. And, you know, like on one hand, I remember one reviewer saying that the movie is like one big, long music video. And he says, you know, for some people that's going to be great, some people that isn't going to be great. Well, you know, there's nothing else out there like this movie, and that alone makes it, you know, makes it a real draw.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Mr. Woodcock couldn't care less.
Mr. Woodcock, it sounded like it was going to be fun, like back in February. I think it was February or March when this thing was first supposed to come out.
Yeah, because I remember seeing previews for it exactly a year ago.
Yeah, because when we did a different podcast, we were going to do an episode titled Movies with the Word Cock in the Title.
I remember that, yes.
Remember that? Because it was because of this movie. This movie and a film called The Adventures of Cock Robin, which still has not been released. I don't know why.
Wasn't there some Cock and Balls thing, too, coming? Was that the same thing?
Or was that Balls of Fury?
It probably was.
I don't know. I mix my so many cock and ball movies anyway.
And then you got Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story. And
that's right. That's,
yeah, I love the opening when it's like, Mr. Cox, I need Cox. I'm like, oh.
No, I think he's like, he's got to think about his entire life before it goes out on stage.
Well, and he's like, this is going to be the best day ever. Nothing that bad could possibly happen. Let's go play machete catch. I'm like, what?
I remember when we saw Superbad and Judd Apatow actually had the trailer premiere in front of Superbad. And like, yeah.
I'm sold.
Absolutely. It looks great.
Yes. Okay. Sorry.
And then finally, the Brave one, you know, and I'm such a cynic because I'm like, all I see is Death Wish. That's all I see. To me, it's just Death Wish with Jodie Foster.
But it is Jodie Foster.
And it's Neil Jordan, one of my favorite directors, guy who did The Crying Game, Interview with the Vampire, and Mona Lisa, Michael Collins. I love this guy. I'll see any movie he does, even though he's done some bad movies. He did Breakfast on Pluto a few years ago with Cillian Murphy. And,
oh.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah, so it's like his stuff runs hot and cold, but for you know, a big budget studio movie, it looks good. Terrence Howard's a great actor. Who knows? It could be good.
It could be, yes. And going from what could be good to what probably sucks, let's go ahead and talk about what DVDs are coming out next week.
Well, for those of you who can't get enough of your Austin 316 Stone Cold Steve Austin from WWF Films, for those of you who just couldn't get enough of The Marine, which would be me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. You got to see The Condemned or not. Apparently, it's dreadful.
Well, and Vinnie Jones is in it, too.
Oh, well, then I'll see. Okay. Okay, I'll buy it. Okay. And then the big, big news of the week, Death Proof is getting a special DVD release and an unrated two-disc special edition. You've got Kurt Russell, Quentin Tarantino, and the missing lap dance scene. Come on.
Yeah, and
no trailers.
Well, and I guess there's a scene in the second act, a black and white segment, a huge black and white segment that's put in the movie, too.
Cool. So this is the director's cut that was shown at Cannes,
yeah.
And it's never been seen elsewhere. Yes, it sucks that we don't have the entirety of the Grindhouse experience,
but
it suck.
I forget where, but I read that they've actually come out and said they're going to come out with the Grindhouse experience DVD. So it's going to be the theatrical.
So maybe this is a rental, but for those of you like myself that I'll love Death Proof, I'm going to buy it. Say, who am I kidding?
And I remember at Comic-Con, they actually had the cases on display.
Yeah.
And it was a cool metal. It comes
the steel
in a metal. Book. Yeah.
I'm not sure if we're getting that in the U.S. or not.
Oh,
I'm not positive. I remember reading some rumors that Canada was getting it. But it could be that... here's the thing. If it's the same company in Canada, that's also the same company. Best Buy owns that company. So it's very possible it could be like a Best Buy exclusive.
Okay. I hope to God. And then you said you heard something else that maybe Best Buy might have a bonus disc with?
Yeah, I forget which retailer. I think it was Best Buy. One of the rumors is that the bonus disc will have the extra trailers. But I don't see them letting that kind of footage... that kind of a feature get out for one exclusive retailer to give out for free. I just don't see it. And then in a month we get the Planet Terror. Two disc edition, yeah.
But see, I don't know what was left out of Planet Terror.
That one scene where it just cuts straight to where it explained everything. I don't want to see the extended cut of Planet Terror.
I don't think I don't think they even filmed that. I think that was like the gag.
They're saying that there apparently there's like an extra 20 minutes or so, as opposed to Death Proof having like 45.
Feel like that would make it too long. Because Death Proof, I could use some more story. Really could. Like,
yeah.
Absolutely.
For as much as I love the 90 minute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Planet Terror, I don't want to see those holes filled in. That was part of what made it a fun movie. You're like, I don't care. I don't want to know because it'd be so bad I wouldn't want to watch the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I really feel like I've seen as much Planet Terror as I could see, but I could see some more Death Proof. Hey, I mean, get the lap dance.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, okay. And then, not quite so exciting news, a movie I think about two people saw in the theaters, Curtis Hanson's Lucky You with Eric Bana and Drew Barrymore and Robert Duvall. We Are Marshall Mathers, which no one saw last Christmas. Chuck director McGee's last Mick movie. And then there's Zoo.
I just put it in there because I was going to make you talk about Zoo again.
What is Zoo?
Zoo? Well, let me... actually, we got an audio right here. I love you, Bessie.
Oh.
That's what the movie... Yeah.
That's okay. That's the one about people who love horses.
Yes.
It's about men... It's a documentary now with reenactions about men who are seriously in love with their animals. And apparently it's not like a finger-pointing movie at all. It's supposed to be like a very even-heeled...
Good.
Even,
that's exactly what I want to see.
Even horseshoed, even oated.
And I'll bring up the last one. Because I put this in there because... no, not Sue. DC Animation... you've seen Marvel Animations come out with some movies. They've done Ultimate Avengers 1 and 2,
yes.
Invincible, Iron Man, Doctor Strange. DC is going a very distinctly different route. They are going with... established stories that are pretty legendary. And so next week they're going to be releasing the Doomsday story of Superman, which is where Superman dies. Spoiler alert.
For everyone who did not read that comic book when it came out in 1992.
Everyone doesn't remember that when the news broke and it was
the biggest story.
Yeah, and you could buy the special issue with the black armband. And
that's right.
I never did buy it.
But. I did. I freaking loved that story. So I think I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to do through the entire, like, bringing, you know, the entire Rise of the Superman and everything. If they do, I can't wait. But they're doing this story for all the comic geeks. They're also doing The New Frontier, which is a story about the classic age Justice League, which has Hal Jordan as, yes. Oh, and Superman. Adam Baldwin is the voice of Superman and Clark Kent.
Wow.
Yeah, I was kind of interested.
That's cool.
Neil Patrick Harris is going to be doing the voice of The Flash in the upcoming New Frontier.
Huh.
And then,
he's the voice of Spider-Man. He's the voice of everyone.
Yeah, he's done a lot.
Yeah.
Doogie Howser is the man.
Indeed, yes. And he's in Harold and Kumar, too. that trailer played
that's like
before
the,
Superbad.
That's like the one thing about Harold and Kumar 2 that I'm looking forward to. Yeah. Like, what else can they do with Neil Patrick Harris as himself?
There you go. And then a little less well-known, but they're also going to be doing the Teen Titans Judas Contract, which is a really dark story. Hmm. Granted, it's probably best known for when Robin turned into Nightwing, but I'm really fascinated to see them take on these really adult stories. Like, I don't know if they'll end up wanting to do like a death in the family or something, but if they keep going this route, I could see them doing it.
This is great. I mean, this is, you know, I'm all for live action, $180 million all-star cast comic book movies, but this is the way to do it. This is really cool.
It lets you tell those stories. If it lets you tell those stories that really I can see not appealing to a cinematic audience, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and the Superman Doomsday story, that is so cool. I can't wait.
Oh, yes. Cool. All right, well, shall we move on to some listener mail? Shall we do a printer voice first?
We'll do
print.
Voice.
Oh,
print.
Let's do print first.
It's not my
rock, scissors, paper.
Oh, we'll do print first. And I have an apology to make because I missed Alex's. Alex is from formerly of Screen Geeks, or possibly soon to be of Screen Geeks again. Not other Alexes that you may have heard of before. Sent us an email about episode 10, and I totally lost it in the shuffle. So I'll read it real quick.
Cool.
Hey, Dave and Barry, this is Dave. This is Dave. Wow, hang on. Hey, Dave and Barry, this is Alex, one of your long-lost co-hosts from the original Screen Geeks episodes. I should add as a side note, I recorded the first episode, the long-lost episode that will never see the light of day with Alex. We experimented with this stuff together, so yes, looking forward to having him come back aboard as well. I just wanted to add a movie to your list of boxing movies for episode 10. I believe you neglected to mention Play It to the Bone with Antonio Banderas and Lucy Liu. That movie could almost fail... Could almost fall under the chick flick boxing movie Shubs genre, if I remember right, because there's a love story somewhere in the middle of it.
Yep.
Anyway, love the new format of the show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. Blade to the Bone, that's Ron Shelton, one of my favorite sports movie writers. The guy wrote and directed Bull Durham, The Great White Hype, White Men Can't Jump, and Cobb. The guy is the king of the sports movie. Unfortunately, we forgot it. But yeah, he's absolutely right. Blade to the Bone had a love story in it between the gorgeous, gorgeous Lolita Davidovich, who is Ron Shelton's wife, and she has a love triangle in the movie between Antonio Banderas and Woody Harrelson. The movie ends with a pretty good climactic boxing match. It's not the greatest movie, but it's definitely worthy of the canon of being a boxing film. So thank you, Alex.
Very cool. All right, and our next one comes from the ever reliable. If it's been another episode, it's Ethan.
Ethan,
yes.
He says, "Hey guys, just wanted to talk about the latest episode. On the topic of remakes, there needs to be a remake of Dune. I initially loved the Lynch film when I first saw it, but after reading the book, I realized what an incomprehensible mess it is. It still has amazing visuals and some wonderfully Lynchian quirks, but it is not the book, and it doesn't do it justice at all, which is sad because it's more because of the studio and not because of Lynch. I really think it could work as a 3-hour epic. Just get someone like Peter Jackson, not necessarily him, but someone with the same passion, and they could make it work. I know that Ridley Scott was originally set to direct it before Lynch was attached, but dropped out due to a family issue. Get him! He needs to make a return to sci-fi. I agree. Some may consider a true adaptation to be unfilmable, but that was also cited by Lord of the Rings. And don't bring up the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries that sucked ass. Ethan." Okay, a few things. First of all, it's widely known that the movie originally was going to be made before Lynch did it. Back in the early 70s, Alejandro Jodorowsky, who went on to make El Topo and Holy Mountain, he was going to direct it. Pink Floyd was going to do the music, and playing Baron Harkonnen, Orson Welles, and Salvador Dali was going to be in the film too. I mean, this is like the dream Whoa. Sci-fi movie that was never made. You can imagine how cool it was. And that,
my brain just broke thinking about it.
Well, this is even more heartbreaking. Let's see. It was either Ronald Shusett or Ed O'Bannon, one of the two writers of Alien. Apparently, one of them worked on this Dune project for a while, but Jodorowsky, it never happened. But apparently, Shusett said that a lot of the drawings that they did, a lot of the conceptual artwork, he says when he saw Star Wars, he's like, somebody leaked our stuff. So I don't know how much we could trust him, but apparently this thing was so influential that apparently Star Wars had a lot of the same ideas. Lucas is like the janitor in the studio. He's like, "Hey, look at these. I'm going to take these drawings." All right, so I got to defend the Sci-Fi Channel remake of Dune. I freaking loved Frank Herbert's Dune. I agree in the sense that the acting performances were quite weak. The guy who played Baron Harkonnen, the one who played the princess, was great, but the lead actor as Paul Atreides, I thought was completely weak. And William Hurt, who I love, I thought he was miscast in that as well, but you know what? I thought they told the stories well. You know, I thought it was better than The Phantom Menace. I thought it was just a really,
That's not hard. I mean,
I guess that's true. I really liked it. I didn't see Children of Dune. I didn't see the sci-fi TV movie sequel, but I thought Frank Herbert's Dune was really well. I thought John Harrison did a really good job with it. So I got to disagree with you there about them sucking ass, because I didn't think it sucked ass.
All right, then. So. And then we have a piece of voicemail from one of the Geek Label crew, and let's go ahead and roll that now.
Screen Geeks, this is the Vicar from Geek Label Radio. I know we're talking about movies, but since you guys mentioned Parker Lewis, how do I not call you and talk about Parker effing Lewis, man? The greatest TV show of the 1990s. In fact, we were just at Dragon Con and hooked up with Corin Nemec himself, with whom we discussed briefly the situation of Parker Lewis not being available on DVD and how much that sucks. But Parker Lewis, what was awesome about Parker Lewis was that nothing else like it was on TV. They broke down the fourth wall. They talked to the camera. They had the most ludicrous things. You mentioned the James Bond thing as far as the gadgets, Jerry pulling stuff out of his coat. Oh, my God. Yeah, I know. When I describe it, it sounds really lame. But if you haven't seen Parker Lewis, well, good luck, because you can't get it on DVD except through a special antenna, which is how I have mine. Seek it out. See it. Live it. Love it. Vicar out.
Thank you to the Vicar. I'm actually using said special antenna to get a hold of the first season of Parker Lewis right now. So
Parker Lewis can't lose. What else has Corin Nemec done since then? Do we know? I know he was in some movie. I can't remember what it was. Should I remember?
I'm looking it up.
I'm looking it up. Hang on here. Okay. I love the IMDb.
Yay.
Apparently he was in The Stand.
That's it. The Stand.
Wow, that's a goofy-ass picture. Okay, wow. Navy NCIS. Stargate SG-1.
Oh, still recording?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, that's enough. Yeah, he hasn't made quite... He didn't quite make the leap that I figured he would, but it's all good.
I remember him... Yeah, because I remember reading that he was in The Stand, and I was like, oh, Corin Nemec just returned to TV, and yeah, that's it.
It's all good.
But he was Parker Lewis, and he'll always have that. I will never be Parker Lewis, but Corin Nemec was Parker Lewis.
Hells yes. Yes. Cool. Well, let's go ahead and put this bad boy to bed.
That's what she said.
Oh, God.
Yay. Sorry. I love it.
Don't make me start busting out Viva Viagra, because I will.
Whenever you could find a she said that moment in life, I say always take it.
There you go.
Oh, I abuse it, though, sometimes. So.
I'm going to get a Viva Viagra clip just to counter that.
No. Yay!
Just because. Oh, I was watching football today, and they had like the salsa dance mix of it. Oh, it was... Really? Yeah, oh, it was
the
bad.
Salsa dance remix of Viva,
or like Tango or something. Yeah, it was, I think it was a Tango.
What a strange world we live in.
Absolutely. Okay, well, if you'd like to email us, you can hit Barry or I specifically, Dave or Barry at screengeeks.com. If you'd like to email all of us about the show, we'll forward stuff off to Josh and what have you.
Yeah.
Email us over at podcast@screengeeks.com, and our voicemail number is 719-966-4307. We do love us some voicemail. And I think that'll just about do it. So until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh.
Listen to Screen Geeks Radio. Take it easy.